Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Coming up, the Brooklyn Nets season is over, but there's still plenty of playoff basketball being played, a lot of which will have major implications for the Nets moving forward. We're going to be focusing on one first-round series and one franchise that is going to play the biggest role in shaping the Nets' future. All that and more after the theme music. What is up, Nets world? We're back here on the Believe in Nets podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. As always, big thanks to all of you for listening. Make sure to subscribe to Believe in Nets on all streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. If you enjoy this content, smash that like button, leave a five-star review. That really goes a long way. But today we're going to be talking about the NBA playoffs, which do not feature the Nets, but have featured some matchups that will have serious implications for the Nets and their team building process moving forward. And for Nets fans over the last year, if there's one team that they've been monitoring closely outside of Brooklyn, it has unquestionably been the Phoenix Suns, who pretty much traded their entire future to the Nets at the 2023 trade deadline to acquire Kevin Durant and pair him with Devin Booker. And then the ensuing offseason this last summer really went as all in could possibly go. All their first-round picks were out the door. They traded all of their remaining draft capital, which was four first-round pick swaps and six second-round picks, to acquire Bradley Beal and form a new big three in the desert down there in Maricopa County. And the expectations really title or bust. And, you know, this is for a Suns team who the Nets now effectively have a short position on their future. They bet against the future of the Suns. They came in with new owner Matt Ishbia. They made the swing. They had title expectations coming into the season. They obviously underwhelmed during the regular season, narrowly missed the play-in tournament, finished with the sixth seed. And they were matched up with an up-and-coming team in the Minnesota Timberwolves in the 3-6 matchup of the first round, a series that I think most people had the Suns favored in. You know, a lot of people thought that the matchup was favorable for Phoenix. And then they come in and they get swept 4-0. That series concluded on Sunday, and Anthony Edwards just comes in and absolutely takes the soul of the Suns, of Kevin Durant, of Devin Booker. And it was from game one. We all saw that clip of Anthony Edwards going back and forth with Kevin Durant, you know, kind of jawing at him, KD smiling back at him. And it was kind of like this moment of, okay, Anthony Edwards looks like the alpha in this series off the jump. Will that hold? Will that sustain? The Timberwolves come back in game two. They win that. And then Anthony Edwards just dominates the rest of the way and really put them away in game four. And what was, I know you're not supposed to say it, and everybody's made this comparison, but it was really a Jordan-esque performance down the stretch there. Really just looking into the eyes of an opponent, of a veteran team, and really just, as I said, taking their soul. But now we got to talk about the backstory, you know, of the Suns, what their future outlook is. And that's going to be the whole focus of this episode, is how dire is the Suns situation after what was really just a shocking sweep. I don't think people would be all that shocked that they lost because they didn't look great in the first round in the regular season. But to be swept by a Minnesota team that's, you know, a very good team but a younger team, was pretty surprising. And it says a lot about the Suns moving forward. And if you're a Nets fan, there hasn't been a lot to write home about this season. There wasn't a lot for the Nets to sell their fan base on in terms of future outlook. This was a pretty miserable 2023-24 campaign. But you finally got one here, and you finally got a positive development because it looks all the more likely like this Suns experiment is already cooked. You know, only just a year and a half in, it looks like this is going nowhere. And I'm going to outline all of that, all the reasons for that, why the outlook is extremely dire for them, and then how it could affect the Nets draft picks and how it could affect their team building approach and kind of how they should approach, you know, whether to use those picks in trades, whether to ride it out and see the value there. But, you know, just starting with this Suns team, they completely looked in disarray throughout this season. You know, a lot of points in the regular season, they got it going towards the end of the year. But then in this first round series, all of the issues that you potentially could have had with this team and you envisioned for this team came to the forefront. Their lack of a point guard, their lack of offensive continuity, their lack of defensive continuity. Frankly, there was a lot of possessions in that series where it looked like they just had no clue what they were doing on either end of the ball. But it all culminates in this sweep. And then shortly after this sweep, Shams Charania releases an article that kind of peels back the curtain on the dysfunction there in Phoenix. And pretty much the main takeaways of the article were the players had lost all faith in head coach Frank Vogel. He's going to be fired, pretty much, it seems like. Said some were even laughing at Vogel when he laid into the team after that embarrassing loss to the Clippers last month, where the Suns were down, I think, 35 to 4. You know, Durant also wasn't happy about his role in the offense, apparently. There was a lack of leadership within the locker room, you know, according to a lot of sources within there. So just not good stuff. And you know, when you talk about where this Suns team is at moving forward, they don't have, you know, a lot of flexibility. They have pretty much historically little flexibility to improve this roster, because after this year's draft, Phoenix won't own their own first or second round pick until 2031. They'll, you know, like the Nets trade with the Houston Rockets, they'll have their swaps in between, but they don't have control of their own pick. And the only picks that they have to trade right now are the 22nd pick in this year's draft, which is viewed as a weaker draft, and then their future first-round pick in 2031, which, you know, who knows what that's going to turn into. And I think if I were them, I would be kind of wary about dealing that, given where this team looked like it was at. But pretty much not a lot of draft capital to improve this roster. And then you look at their financial situation, and new owner Matt Ishbia came in and acquired Durant and then made the swing for Beal this offseason. And pretty much, you know, while the Durant trade preceded the new collective bargaining agreement coming out, after that CBA came out and the new second apron was implemented, went all in on the Beal trade and kind of cast aside concerns about what their long-term payroll could look like and the team building constraints that could set on them, you know, moving forward. And now the Suns have $194 million committed to seven players under guaranteed contracts next season. The second apron is $189.5 million. So they're already over, they're already into the second apron with just seven players that they have under contract. And as a second apron team, the Suns won't have access to the taxpayer mid-level exception, meaning they can only offer free agents minimum contracts. They can't offer anybody anything, you know, more than that who they don't own bird rights on. They also cannot aggregate salaries in trades, meaning they can't package multiple players to try to bring back a single player making more. So those team building constraints mean outside of using the first round picks that they have left to trade, they really have no vehicles or avenues to adding more to this roster. And, you know, when you talk about the Beal trade, which was, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, overreacted to in the moment thinking that it was going to work. And, you know, it's understandable why. It's a lot of people thought it was going to be, you know, like the 2020-2021 Nets with KD, Kyrie, and Harden, kind of a light version of that, of just an extremely talented group of on-ball scorers who are going to be able to operate in space and who are going to be able to, you know, really get the most out of their scoring ability by having those guys complement each other. But it never came together because, as has been the case, you know, throughout his career, Beal battled injuries and this three never really got to play together. They were lacking kind of an organizer and a setup guy, a point guard, and all these things kind of just built upon each other. And the team wasn't able to rally from adversity on either end of the floor in this first round series. And now you look at what they owe Beal. This is Bradley Beal. They brought in, they owe him $161 million over the next three seasons. And The best part of that is that he has a no trade clause in his contract, which he did not waive after Washington traded him to Phoenix. So they can't move Bradley Beal. Not that his contract, you know, it's about as negative value could possibly get, but you know, they're not able to trade him outside of, you know, moving Durant or moving Booker. They don't really have the pieces to move around to really improve this roster anywhere significantly. And if you look at the landscape of the Western Conference now, you have the Minnesota Timberwolves, who just dominated the Suns in the first round. You have the Oklahoma City Thunder, we're an up-and-coming team. We're only getting better. You obviously have the Denver Nuggets, you know, and then you have the teams like the Dallas Mavericks, Los Angeles Clippers. We even have teams in the back end like the New Orleans Pelicans, who underwhelmed but are going to look, you know, their GM just said they're going to look to making a significant push to improve this offseason. So there's just a lot of teams that are ahead of the Suns right now, and the Suns don't have a meaningful way to leap those teams. And when you look at just the conversation of the star landscape now, I think this first round made it clear that, you know, Anthony Edwards was the alpha and the most dominant player in this series. And you look across the board and Devin Booker, you know, he's a great player. Nobody's questioning that, but his stock and his overall, not his stock, but his overall reputation in the, you know, pyramid and landscape of NBA superstardom, it took a major hit over the last 2 weeks. It really did, because it looked like Anthony Edwards, a guy who plays his position, a younger version of him in the Western Conference, just looked like a far superior player in this series. So, you know, where does that leave them if they have, you know, Devin Booker, who, you know, took a little bit of a step back in terms of how you would view him in the pecking order. You have Kevin Durant, who's entering his age 36 season. And then you have Bradley Beal, who's on this albatross of a contract that they can't get rid of, and they're tied to it. It, you know, it doesn't look good. And then obviously, as I said, they don't have the pieces to add around that. And, you know, and that's not even mentioning something that I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, was that they fell to the sixth seed and they were like a game away. It could have gone one way or the other of them on the last game of the regular season falling into the play-in, despite Kevin Durant at his age 35 season playing the most healthy year that he had in, you know, since he came back from the Achilles injury. We saw Kevin Durant with the Nets. He played 137 games over the last three seasons combined entering this year. He played 35 his first full year with the Nets. He played 55 the year after that, and then he played 47 last season. And then Durant played 75 games this year. They got the healthiest version of him that they could have possibly hoped for. He avoided, you know, it seemed like every year with the Nets, there was one of those injuries where, you know, whether it was Bruce Brown or Jimmy Butler falling into his knee, having those MCL sprains, he would have those extended absences that the Nets really couldn't come back from and, you know, rally around their supporting cast in those moments, and they would just free fall. He didn't have that injury this season. And the Suns still struggled and nearly fell into the play-in and then got swept in the first round. So you're saying, you know, now Durant's entering his age 36 season next year, and you're talking about a supporting cast that, frankly, is just bad. If, you know, one of those injuries occurs, which has historically been the case, and they have an extended absence for him, this is a team that in no way is equipped to, you know, sustain that and keep moving forward in a positive direction. So that's just, you know, another thing that's working, you know, against the Suns in this long-term equation. And now you talk about how is this going to go for the Suns? How are they going to proceed from here? And, you know, while I think that they're going to run it back next season and just make some slight tweaks around the roster, you know, probably look to move this year's first round pick, sign other guys to minimum contracts, try to bring back Royce O'Neal, who they acquired from the Nets at this year's deadline. While I think they're going to do all that and try to run it back, I would not at all be surprised if the Suns and Durant agree to mutually part ways this offseason and look for a trade, because, you know, Durant's extension eligible, you know, this summer. He's going into his age 36 season, as I said. It doesn't look like, you know, the Suns are in anywhere near equipped to build a title team, you know, in that time frame of these next two seasons. And then, you know, where does that leave Durant? Does he want to stay here? Do they think that it's, you know, the best route to just trade him and then, you know, recoup value now before it dips even more as he's continuing to age? You risk another potential injury maybe, and then his value really significantly goes down. You know, I would not be surprised at all if that happens. I think the most likely outcome is that they hold Durant and they run it back next season, which will likely fail. At that point, they'd likely look to deal him next summer, you know, when his value would be low.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. the McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's toilet bowl cleaner disinfects both the toilet brush and bowl for 2-in-1 disinfection, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug, but I ended up connecting to the world around me, a world where each sunset was painted, where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
So that really leaves two paths of where Phoenix could take this pertaining to, you know, their Durant situation. Obviously, the first of which I just said, they could look to run it back, make slight roster tweaks and try to see how it goes. Or the second, they could trade Durant within the next two transaction cycles, either this offseason or at next year's trade deadline, which would, you know, significantly increase the value of their 2025 first round pick, which the Nets own. The Nets own the first round pick in 2025, 2027, and 2029, all unprotected. And they also own an unprotected swap in 2028. So, you know, them trading Durant either this offseason or at next year's trade deadline, particularly this offseason, should significantly increase the value of that 2025 pick, because I don't see a scenario where the Suns trade Durant and get better immediately next season. It would more be a move looking towards the long term. And, you know, even if they don't do that and they go the first route that I was talking about, I don't see that as a situation that's going to work out for them. And then in next season, I think they end up trading Durant because he's going to have 1 year left on his contract. It's going to make most sense for both sides to want to move on so that they're not, you know, losing him for nothing or extending him into his age, you know, 38, 39, 40 seasons. That's not going to make sense if the situation's not working out. So either way, I see this situation heading towards a Durant trade. Now, the real question is, where does that leave Devin Booker? Where would a Durant trade leave Devin Booker, who has grown to be one of the most beloved athletes in Arizona State history during 9 years as, you know, the Suns' franchise player? And, you know, where Durant would, you know, where Booker would be after a move like that in his, in terms of his mindset, that is the biggest point of discussion. You know, whether, you know, a Durant trade happens this offseason or at the trade deadline or next summer, it doesn't matter. That is what the question is going to be, because that's going to be really where, if we get to that point where Durant's out the door, Booker's looking around, he's saying, you know, I'm 28 going to 29 potentially. I need to win. I haven't had a deep playoff run since that 2021 year where they lost to the Bucks in the championship. I need to go somewhere that's, you know, going to put me in a position for success. If he does say that and he does ask out, that's the position where the picks of the Nets own in 27, 28, 29 get really, really, really juicy and could be some of the most valuable assets in the league, because, you know, you don't know where the Suns are going to be at that point. You know, they're going to be going into a rebuild, and it's just a question of how fast can they get that situation together. Are they getting, you know, any blue chip star pieces back in return that are going to help them immediately? Is it more of a long-term build out? It's, you know, very similar to the position that the Nets find themselves in right now, you know, ironically. So you talk about, you know, factoring all of what I just said in with, you know, thinking Durant, or I think it's a foregone conclusion that Durant's going to be traded, you know, by next summer, you know, or, you know, will be traded at the latest next summer, because I just don't see this Phoenix team going anywhere. And it comes to a question of, you know, obviously, like I said, where does that leave Booker? And then ultimately, how does Sean Marks value these picks? Because we all know, we've all heard ad nauseum that the Nets have a known desire to acquire a star to pair with Mikal Bridges to re-enter, you know, the playoff picture and eventually the contention conversation. How are they going to go about that? Because, you know, these Suns picks are their primary trade assets into getting that done. They're going to acquire a star, even though they are projected, you know, next offseason after Ben Simmons' contract comes off the books, they could have upwards of $40, $50, $60 million in cap space. But with the modern landscape of NBA player movement, the more viable route to acquiring a star is trading for one, because a lot of teams just aren't going to let stars hit free agency. They're either going to extend them or they're going to trade them before that. So, you know, a guy like Donovan Mitchell is a good example of this, who the Nets have been linked to, you know, at several points. He's entering the final year of his contract next season. You know, do the Cavs look to play it out? You know, if he doesn't sign an extension with them, they're going to look to trade him. And if he does sign an extension with them, they're going to move forward and he could still ask out. We're seeing the same thing with Giannis. These guys like to get their money, you know, and if they're not going to get their money, or if they're not agreeing to take the money from that team, they're going to get traded before that contract expires. So, you know, with these Suns picks being the Nets' primary assets to that, the logical, you know, conclusion a lot of people have drawn is they're going to package these picks for a star, whether it's Mitchell or whoever else. And, you know, I wrote this in an article right after the Suns sweep, but if I'm Sean Marks, I'm being very cautious with these Suns picks and, you know, proceeding forward while monitoring this Booker situation in the kind of way that I just outlined it. Because as I just said, the full value of those Booker picks is going to come, of the Suns picks is going to come if Booker eventually leaves. And if it eventually gets to a point where Durant's out the door and then Booker follows him out, that's when those picks are going to just skyrocket in value. So while there may be players, you know, like a Donovan Mitchell, like a whoever available this offseason, if the Nets are to use those Suns picks and package them and go for a guy like that, you know, who's, you know, a very good player, like Donovan Mitchell's a top 15 player in the NBA, not like saying anything about him, but pretty much if what I'm saying is if you trade those picks this summer, and then this Phoenix thing fully implodes and we get to a position where, whether, you know, 1, 2, 3 years down the line, Devin Booker is asking out. I don't think they're going to wait 3 years, but if Devin Booker's asking out sometime in the next 2 years and you had already cashed in those Suns picks, you're not using them when they're at their full value. And then, you know, it's not even a foregone conclusion. You know, I'm saying that just because I think that this is the way the Nets are operating, I'm talking about this as if the Nets are going to trade these picks and that it's a foregone conclusion, because I think that it's the most likely route that this is going. But there's definitely a debate of whether they should trade these picks at all. You know, a lot of people, that is a frequent point of discussion within the Nets fan base, within the Nets Twitterverse right now. You know, should they just tear this down and should they just go forward with these Suns picks that are looking pretty tasty and just ride it out that way, as opposed to looking to cash them in for a star? You know, I think that's a more nuanced discussion that I'm going to get into on a later podcast, but there's definitely validity to, you know, both lines of thinking, because, you know, the Nets reportedly had an opportunity to trade Mikal Bridges at the trade deadline and get back some of their draft picks from the James Harden trade from the Houston Rockets. So, you know, if you look at that situation, if the Nets were able to get back their draft picks, particularly that 2025 pick, would be extremely valuable in those negotiations. And I don't believe that Phoenix, that Houston was actually offering that. But if they were to get back, you know, a chunk of their draft capital from Houston and move forward in a rebuild, having control of their own draft destiny, which while also having the stockpile of Suns picks going into the future with some of their younger pieces sticking around, you know, whether it's a Cam Thomas, Nick Claxton, Noah Clowney, you know, whoever, you know, it's going to look ugly in the short term, but they would be set up very, very nicely, you know, similar to how, you know, a team like an Oklahoma City came up having control of their picks, having draft capital from a lot of other people. A little bit different because Oklahoma City obviously acquired SGA from the Clippers, who has turned into their MVP candidate. But, you know, in that mold, they would have that ability. So there's a lot of validity to that route. And there's also a lot of validity, you know, to the other route. Maybe not a lot. I trend in the other direction, but there is some validity to them looking, you know, to use these to get that you know, top-fledged guy, whoever it may be, we don't know who it's going to be, because those tank situations don't always guarantee that you're going to get that, you know, superstar 1A guy. You do have to have some luck involved. It's no guarantee either way. People like to talk about it like, oh, if we, you know, just go into a rebuild and we have these Suns pick and we have our own picks, we're going to get a number one or number two pick in the draft. We're going to get a blue chip superstar, you know, like that could happen. It could also not happen. It's no guarantee. It's no guarantee the other way also. But if you're looking for the Nets to trade these picks, and this is why I talked about them, you know, proceeding very cautiously with these Suns picks and potentially not cashing them in this summer where they're not at full value, is can they have enough draft assets to, or just assets in general, can they have enough to make a trade for a star and then also have enough left over to bring in another complimentary star with that person? Because the Nets are not one move away. They're a team that's two moves away, and they're a team that, you know, with Mikal Bridges on this value contract, while it's only, you know, he only has 2 years left on his deal, the allure of him on that value contract and the allure of him in general is being able to put him into a number three position where he was with Phoenix initially, where he's most comfortable, and getting the full version of him and bringing in another two guys potentially who have the ability to vault this team into true contender status. Now, you can argue and quibble about whether that's a realistic task. I think that it potentially could be, but it all depends on how, you know, stingy they are with these Suns picks and whether they're able to get true full value out of them. Because if they are able to maximize the value of these Suns picks in negotiations, like the further we get down this Phoenix timeline and the more valuable that these Suns picks are, it's going to be each pick, you know, there's going to be less assets that need to be included overall because these Suns picks are going to be valued so much higher. So if they get them at full value, they could have another, you know, enough draft assets left over from other teams and from their own picks that we're getting now further into the future where their picks aren't encumbered by Houston, where they could have enough, you know, in the closet for two deals. That is the mold of where this goes. And cashing in these picks on a guy this offseason and blowing, you know, all three of those Suns picks, you know, the 2027, 2025 also, the 2025, 2027, 28, 29. If you're blowing the bulk of those now, and then you don't have, you know, what's available left to go after that true 1A tentpole star, whether it's whoever you want to say, whether it's a, you know, a Giannis, whether it's a Luka, whatever guy could come available. We don't know, but that's the idea of the mold there. So pretty much if I'm Sean Marks, I'm proceeding cautiously and I'm not looking to cash in, you know, the bulk of these picks this summer for a player that, you know, while maybe very good, like a Donovan Mitchell, isn't going to, you know, move the needle, and it's going to leave me in a position where I don't have enough left to try to outbid teams for this top-fledged guy. So that's pretty much how I'm viewing that. And, you know, this first round, you know, it came out with a positive outcome for Nets fans with Durant and with these Suns, you know, just pretty much imploding. It was the best scenario that Nets fans could have hoped for. I don't think, while I think a lot of people were starting to get a taste after last season and through the first half of this year, this Suns team was not going to be a title team and did not have those kinds of, you know, that wasn't a realistic possibility for them in this window. I think them being swept in the first round, the Shams hit piece coming out just minutes after that, and the, you know, the look of how this is trending for Phoenix is, you know, it's happening faster than I think a lot of people could have envisioned. And, you know, just talking about Durant, because Durant's a guy that will be forever intertwined with the history of the Brooklyn Nets fan base, and obviously the modern Brooklyn Nets fan base, with how all this stuff went over the last 4 years. You just, you know, looking at Durant and looking at his track record, you know, he had a great season this year. There's no doubt. He's still a great basketball player, as he was with the Nets. But it's just like, it's getting harder and harder to defend Durant. And I've never been to somebody who defended Durant outside of what he did on the basketball court. I think he's a guy that, you know, plays extremely hard and always left it all on the floor. But I've had well-documented criticisms of him from a team building perspective, from a leadership perspective. And if you are somebody that has defended him in those areas over the year, it's just getting really tough to continue to do so, because it's just, it hasn't been a good look for him. I mean, you look at like the timeline of how this stuff has gone down with Durant. He's with Golden State. He wins the titles. He says, you know what? This is Steph's team. I want my own team, you know, whatever. fine. But then he says, you know, I want to put my chips in with Kyrie Irving and I'm going to come to him with Brooklyn. Then, you know, I want to bring in DeAndre Jordan. I want to pay him double what he's worth because, you know, that's my buddy and I think he can play with us. Fine. Then I want to start DeAndre Jordan over a budding center in Jared Allen. And when that doesn't happen, I want to fire Kenny Atkinson and we want somebody else coming in here. Then I want to bring in James Harden. We've been playing pickup in LA over the summer. We're going to form this big three. It's going to be a title team. Oh, wait, that blew up in my face. Now I want the GM and I want the head coach fired. Now, you know, this isn't working out. I want to play with Devin Booker in Phoenix and only Phoenix. Then I lose in the second round and get swept the following season. And right away it comes out, oh, I'm not happy with my role in the offense. I want, you know, or not I want, but it seems like this new head coach and Frank Vogel is going to be the scapegoat and he's going to be fired. And now we're trending towards a situation where hasn't happened yet, but I would think it's pretty likely that Durant could be on the move again in the near future. So all of this stuff, it's just a bad look. And, you know, it really just goes back to the things that held him back in Brooklyn are continuing to follow him and hold him back in Phoenix. And the biggest of those things was leadership qualities. I mean, he just did not display those, whether it was managing the personalities that he brought in with the Nets with, you know, James Harden and Kyrie Irving. Obviously, some of that's on the head coach, but at a lot of points, it didn't seem like Durant wanted a head coach. It didn't seem like Kyrie wanted a head coach. I mean, I saw Nets fans this offseason, you know, at the end of this season, talking about, you know, oh, like the Nets coaching, like what would have happened if they brought in Tibbs? Like they brought in Tibbs. Like if you listen to what KD and Kyrie had to say when Kenny Atkinson was fired and when they brought in Steve Nash, like Kyrie literally said, we don't see ourselves having a head coach and we could both be head coaches someday. And he said, we don't need somebody to come and force our style. So like the leadership there wasn't there from a coaching perspective. And it also just wasn't there from Durant or Irving on the floor. And Durant was unquestionably the best player on the team through all of that. So it was on him, you know, to really bring out the best of those players and the guys alongside him. And then it's happening again in Phoenix. He was asked after game two or game three, who the leader of the team is. And he said, the coach. He said the coach, and Shams put that in his article, and it was, you know, a pretty eye-opening comment and a little bit of a strange comment because, you know, people know the best teams are player-led. Like, you need a strong head coach in place, but that leadership's got to come within, from within, and it hasn't with Durant. And I talk about the same things following him, plaguing him with Phoenix that did in Brooklyn. I mean, if you read that Shams article, like when I was reading it, it was like deja vu. Like I did a double take to make sure that I wasn't reading a Nets article from a few years ago. And I'll read you a quick excerpt. This is, you know, in the middle of that Shams article. He said, after head scratching losses, it was easy to wonder if the Suns had enough leadership inside the locker room to help navigate adversity. Durant said this week that while every Phoenix player has a voice, the freedom to bounce ideas and be heard, the head coach is the leader. It was a curious answer given that championship teams are usually player led. Over the regular season's final weeks, Vogel preached the same message, that after several injuries in the first half of the season, the Suns were improving, that they were figuring it out defensively, that this was a dangerous team. But once the postseason began, as Phoenix prepared to face Minnesota, Vogel said that while the Suns had players with postseason experience, this would be the first time that they'd go through it together. End of excerpt from Shams. And it's just like, is that not something that we all read 3, 4, 5 times, you know, about the Nets, whether it was Steve Nash saying a gazillion times, this team hasn't experienced it together. We need to experience it. Whether it was other people saying that there wasn't leadership within the locker room, talking about them not being able to fight through adversity. Like that is to a T the exact same thing that we saw with the Nets. And now I'm seeing, like, I'm reading Suns reporters and other fans talk about it. Like, you know, this team didn't have the time. They didn't have the big three together for enough games. They weren't able to build continuity during the regular season. And Nets fans, I'm sure, are just sitting here like, yeah, that's how it goes. I mean, that's how it goes with these big threes that you bring in that have injury problems, that don't necessarily have the ability, you know, to fight through these adverse situations. Like, it's how it's going to go. And it's playing out the exact same way. And if you're the Nets, I mean, they've lived through this movie before and they've seen this picture before. So I would hope that Sean Marks, having literally gotten to experience this and now be on the other end of it, like the Rockets are right now, be on the other end and get to analyze how he can best position himself and his team to benefit from this implosion and kind of trying to project out the timeline of this implosion. I would think that he has a little bit of knowledge and benefit there, having already lived through this. So You know, I didn't want to get too deep into bashing Durant because I think Durant's an unbelievable basketball player. He's a generational talent. He's a defining superstar of, you know, my era of childhood and then growing up and coming into the reporting world. But, you know, as somebody who's followed the Nets and reported on the Nets, you know, throughout his tenure, this stuff is becoming a, you know, defining theme of this latter stage of his career. And it's something that is beginning to just be a worse and worse look for him in terms of, you know, how people are going to view this end of his career. He's a surefire, no doubt Hall of Fame player, one of the best offensive players to ever put on a uniform. But I think what I said has merit and it had to be said. And I hope that you guys got a lot out of the conversation of where this Suns team is going, how they built it, why it's coming crashing down, why the outlook is so bleak, and the potential paths that the Nets can take to take advantage of it and build their team out into the future. Really hope you guys enjoyed the analysis there. That's going to do it for this episode of Believe in Nets on the Bleed Podcast Network, your one-stop shop for everything happening across the sports and entertainment world. I'm Eric Slater, Brooklyn Nets beat reporter for ClutchPoints.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, as I said at the top, on all streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Smash the like button, leave a five-star review. You can find all my other work articles on ClutchPoints.com. Also, go to YouTube and subscribe to this podcast. Actually, I made a change to my YouTube channel. It's now Eric Slater MBA. I recently did a film study on Noah Clowney. So I'm going to be doing more content like that. These podcasts, as well as that, will all be posted on there. So go there for all that stuff. Follow me on Twitter. Look at Clutch Points. Got more coverage coming for you throughout the offseason. And we'll see the rest of these playoffs. We'll see how the star player movement landscape is going to work out. And we'll see if any more news comes out about Phoenix going into the future. And I'll have more coverage for it at that time. Talk to you guys soon.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.